welcome to the Lisa Fisher Said podcast. I'm Lisa Fisher, a longtime broadcaster and journalist and now a health coach based in Arkansas who's been in front of a microphone or a camera since the 1980s. I think of myself as the queen of Arkansas media. I started this podcast in 2020 to help you live a better life. Today, we're talking weight loss, hormones, and gut health from the Gutsy Gynecologist. That's her social media handle. She's Dr. Tabitha Barber, and she's a triple board certified physician who can help you look at your health from a point of view you likely haven't considered. You'll get to meet her right after this. I am sitting upright and delightful today because of a team of people who can facilitate that. It's because I have bioidentical hormone replacement therapy from Compounding at cornerstone.com. Now, those of us in Arkansas know them as Cornerstone Pharmacy. Now, they have different owners at different locations. So I've been seeing Brittany Marsh for this for years. And that's the one in the Simmons Bank building here in West Little Rock. But what's important is knowing kind of the science behind BHRT, the bioidentical hormone replacement therapy, and tweaking it because different lab values tell you these things. Well, I only know that because Brittany has taught me so much. I've also learned from the nice folks there, Compounding at cornerstone.com, you can order some of the tests to see what your hormones are doing, and you get 20% at checkout if you use the word Lisa at checkout. So that means you can get the Dutch test. That means you can get the saliva test or any of the supplements there, because I meet a lot of my coaching clients there who are in Arkansas, and we always walk through the supplement, the candy aisle, because sometimes they might need ashwagandha. They might need, I don't know, you know, I don't give medical advice, but we just talk about some things that can optimize their health. And we know that proper supplementation with the proper label, you know, the right company, just don't get it from the big box store. But you can get it there at compoundingatcornerstone.com. I'll tell you who's crushing 2024. It's the folks in Scott, Arkansas, just 15 minutes from downtown Little Rock. And the property is Marlsgate. Marlsgate.com. Link is in show notes. But for those of you who would like to know more about this majestic property, you can go to their website and see kind of the drone footage they've got. You can see on my social media, which is all open, the times that I'm there. I'm their spokesman, and it's such a privilege to do that because this property is so lovingly, tenderly taken care of by Martha Ellen and Bo Talbot, who are just the third owners of this historic mansion in Central Arkansas, actually just 15 minutes from downtown Little Rock. So those of us in Central Arkansas, why haven't you gone? I'm hosting cooking classes there. I also want to invite you to Scott Station, which is the restaurant there on Highway 165. Guys, some of the best food I've ever had, not even kidding. And then there's the shops there at Scott, and then Curve Market. We're getting into spring, so that means we will see the spring bounty and the summer bounty of locally raised fruits and vegetables. You're helping the community. You're helping the community of Scott, and you're walking away with a full tummy if you eat at Scott Station. Find out more by going to their website, marlsgate.com.
She won most talkative in high school, and she has been running her mouth ever since. Welcome to the Lisa Fisher Said podcast with your host, Lisa Fisher.
Okay, so it's 2024. People have made all these crazy resolutions. They're going to start doing this and that. It always comes down to weight loss for the new year, doesn't it, Dr. Barber?
Absolutely. I think it's ingrained in us to want to hit the reset button and start again.
What's your philosophy on that? Do you think, okay, new beginnings, or do you think someone listening to this in October of 2040 can start a weight loss journey in whatever month or year it is?
I think that you should pay attention to your weight because it's actually a visual representation of your health status. And it's a good gauge of what's going on in your body. But we look at it the wrong way, right? We always think that we're a failure because we can't lose the weight, or there's something wrong with us, or we don't have enough willpower. It's a mindset problem. And really, there's physiology going on that's preventing you from losing weight or causing you to gain weight. And so that's why functional medicine is so incredibly helpful when you're trying to evaluate, why can't I release this weight? It really has nothing to do with necessarily what I'm eating. Sometimes it does, but there can be deeper root cause issues going on. But I always say, let's evaluate it and not put so many emotions to it, not have so much blame and, you know, hate for our body. Let's just look at it a little bit more objectively.
Now, you're very slim. Do you have a weight loss journey?
I was actually 30 pounds heavier just 8 years ago. So I have three children. I have a 30-year-old, I have a 5-year-old grandson, and then I have a 14-year-old and a 13-year-old. So I had two babies.
Oh, my word.
Yes. My first and last are 18 years apart. That's a little bit crazy. But I had the other two back to back. So they're very close in age. And I never really lost the baby weight after that. And I was a very busy, sleep-deprived attending physician. And so I had an extra 30 pounds hanging on me. And it wasn't until I really started studying functional medicine and healed my body that I released it and went back to the state that I should be at. You know, I was thin growing up. I have a very small frame, but it took me really cleaning up my diet and figuring out my lifestyle and healing my thyroid issue to get back into balance and release the weight.
So the first baby you had, and that's part of your story too, and we'll talk about that. You had, and as a teen mom, right?
Yes. I was 16 when I got pregnant, 17 when I had her.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. What a story.
Very traumatic delivery. Yeah.
Oh, so the whole process, I mean, just the fact that you were a teen mom and being pregnant and uninformed, and you didn't probably have internet access to look up every day of your pregnant life, that right there produces a lot of trauma and shock. And then are you saying that the delivery process itself was traumatic?
Absolutely. So I had to go on Medicaid and food stamps. My family didn't have health insurance. We couldn't afford that. I was assigned a doctor who was on the verge of retirement, and he made it clear that I was a second class citizen. You know, he would say things like, I'm getting paid 20 cents on the dollar to see you.
I'm so sorry.
Yeah, thank you. There was no conversation about anything. Things were done to me. Nothing was explained. And looking back, it's mortifying to think what I went through without any kind of informed consent. And so I'm passionate about helping women understand the things that they're signing up for when they go to the doctor, because I put my complete trust in this white coat, assuming he knew what was best for my body. And it turns out he really didn't. And so I have lifelong problems because of having a forceps delivery that, you know, there was no discussion. He turned out to be a family practice doctor. He couldn't perform C-sections, which is what I actually should have had done. And the worst part is, after I had my daughter, I started having major anxiety and sweating, and I lost a significant amount of weight very quickly. And it turns out I was in a Hashimoto's thyroid storm, but that really wasn't explained to me. I was just told, you know, I had some blood drawn, go to the hospital, and they sent me to the radiology department. I just remember laying on a table, being strapped down and having some IVs. What they did was they killed off my thyroid with radioactive iodine, and I had to go on medication after that. And no one explained anything to me. And it wasn't until I was in medical school that I really start to understand, like, what the heck happened to me as a young girl. And it made me angry, right? Like, oh my gosh, we need to have these conversations with women. We can't give all our power to the white coats. Yeah.
That's right. Now looking back, so a thyroid storm isn't, it happens. I mean, and we see it after the baby, right? Postpartum, we often see this. And the Dr. Barber functional medicine approach, what would you do differently when a patient presents with that? And that just means a TSH that's suppressed and there's probably a fast heart rate and some other things, right? When you have the thyroid storm.
And the biggest piece of it is it's an autoimmune process. So my own immune system was attacking my thyroid. Your immune system should attack things from the outside world, not you, not the internal you. And we didn't really understand that 30 years ago. And conventional medicine still doesn't understand how autoimmune conditions get activated and cause destruction in the body. We just know that the immune system is overactive and we better dampen it down. We better suppress it. So we give steroids or biologic drugs to suppress the immune response. But when you do that, the immune system can't fight off the other stuff from the outside world. It can't fight off viruses. And so there's an increased risk of getting majorly sick, like dying from the flu or getting cancer, things like that. So that way of treating autoimmune conditions is dangerous, essentially. What you need to do is figure out why your immune system is angry and confused in the first place. And for me, it was because I was so extremely stressed and I didn't know how to handle it. I had a terrible diet. I had chronic leaky gut. I had irritable bowel syndrome since probably the age of 7 or 8. I remember episodes of eating and running to the bathroom and then not going for days. And, you know, it turns out I don't tolerate gluten and I don't tolerate most dairy, but nobody knew that. And so I ate that way for 40 years and I just took on this diagnosis of, yep, you have IBS. That's just part of you. That's how it is. You just have a thyroid condition. Your thyroid is just sluggish. And these are all lies that we say to make ourselves feel better, but that's not really what's happening with our body. Our body actually has incredible innate intelligence. God designed us to always be in homeostasis and be into balance, but we don't remove the offending agents. We don't figure out what the heck is causing the disruption. And so our body is responding in an effort to keep us balanced. It's not that my thyroid was failing, it's that my body was under attack. So it's just, as a functional doctor, you really try to figure out what is the root cause driving this dysfunction. You don't assume your body's just failing you because it doesn't. It just doesn't.
Before you hopped on this call, I was having a conversation about a similar situation. And I want to segue into this time and place where we are. And that is a patient presenting with, looks like a thyroid storm, but she happens to be on Mounjaro. Do you think there's any connection between that and what it's doing to thyroids? I know it has the black box warning about thyroid cancer, but what about thyroid function and the brain and the pituitary and the thyroid? The thyroid's a gas pedal to the body.
Absolutely. This is an awesome question. I'm so glad you brought this up because Mounjaro and Wegovy and those medications, they cause gut disruption. They cause increased intestinal permeability, which is leaky gut in layman's terms. If you look at the medical literature, you go to PubMed, what you look for is increased intestinal permeability. So that means there's microscopic breakdowns in the doors that open and let things in from our gut into our bloodstream. And those drugs, things like Motrin and NSAIDs and alcohol and Mounjaro, those are what's causing this leaky gut. And we now know from the work from Dr. Alessio Fasano that for an autoimmune condition to happen, you need three things. You need active leaky gut, so stuff is getting from the outside world into the internal you. You need a trigger that angers and confuses the immune system, and you need the genetic propensity. So it's very common for an event that's causing leaky gut to trigger a genetic condition like Hashimoto's. And Hashimoto's usually shows up as thyroid levels being out of whack. And unfortunately, about 80% of women don't get diagnosed properly because the antibody levels just don't get measured. We just look for TSH and free T4, and that's it. We don't look at our TPO antibodies and our TG antibodies or TSI with Graves' disease. And so we're misdiagnosing people and just saying, well, your thyroid's just sluggish. And they're not correlating the gut issue with the thyroid issue, when in fact, the thyroid doesn't just stop working for no reason. There's always a reason it shifts its function. It's downregulating its production of thyroid because it knows that it has to go take care of this issue over here. And we can't lose weight and reproduce and grow gorgeous hair if we need to fight off a virus or heal leaky gut or, you know, whatever that we need to do, get rid of these heavy metals. So the thyroid knows what it's doing. We just don't know what it's doing.
I wonder, I'm surprised after you had your thyroid irradiated, so it meant the function of your thyroid was dead on arrival, and you really do have to take thyroid medicine the rest of your life and probably look at your calcium levels if your parathyroid glands were involved or anything. I'm surprised you got pregnant two more times after that. Were you surprised by that, now knowing what you know?
I was, actually, because I was still at the height of my unhealthiness. I had major adrenal dysfunction before I got pregnant. I would fall asleep driving to work. Mm-hmm. I was absolutely exhausted. My mitochondria just did not work anymore. I had chronic leaky gut. I was on birth control pill for a couple decades. Mm. And so it definitely was surprising to me that I was able to get pregnant. I don't think they killed off my thyroid completely. They killed it off enough that I required Synthroid medication for decades. I did go off of it after I went through functional medicine training, and I really honed in on what was causing my thyroid attack. And I got my thyroid antibodies down from over 1,000 to single digits. Like my TPO antibody, wow, last time I checked, was 8, I think, or 5 or something.
Oh my. And
yeah, it was dramatic. And I went off Synthroid for probably 5 years. I am now back on a small dose of levothyroxine and liothyronine because perimenopause really rocked my world, and that's all involved. So that's something important for listeners to understand, is your health is dynamic and it's always evolving and changing.
Yes.
And that's where we get into problems with dieting. It's like, well, I just did this diet for 3 months. Why can't I stay at the weight that I just lost and be happy? Because it's an ongoing lifestyle. It's a whole journey until you pass away. Like, it's always changing. You always have environmental issues and toxins coming in, disrupting your system.
Not to mention hormones that should fluctuate as we age.
Exactly.
And I've mentioned this before on my podcast, but I heard one person on social media call that age. So my thyroid started dying probably about 36, 37 is when I started having complaints. And I was almost 40 before they saw my antibodies were 1300, the 2400. But they called that period thyropause. And it was probably at the same time I was going through perimenopause. So the thyroid probably got the most attention only because I stomped my stiletto heel and said, my husband said, something is wrong with my wife. And they would say, she's depressed. He'd say, she's not depressed, but she's the most tired human I've ever met. And so that's when, I wish doctors would listen. And I understand that the current model of 10 minutes with or 15 minutes with the patient is unfair to everybody. And that's why I'm such a proponent of functional medicine, is that you can dig and dig and dig and dig. So, just the fact that I think if anyone listening, if their journey, if they can point back to a time after age 35 and they start waking up at 3 and 4 a.m. and they start hating their family for about a week out of the month, mm-hmm, I would say it's your hormones. But if that person goes to a provider every time, because I am a certified health coach and I don't give medical advice, but I hear the same story, they'll say, my doctor says my hormones are fine.
Yeah.
And I go, you just told me about 10 symptoms that your hormones aren't. So what are the lab values that you look for, lab tests that you ask your patients to get? Do you like saliva? Do you like the Dutch? And is there anything we can find out with blood serum testing?
Oh, my goodness. So I just want to make the statement so women listening understand that we're asking the wrong people for advice, by and large.
I hate to tell you that, right?
Right. I went to medical school and became an OBGYN with the sole purpose of being a women's health advocate. That was my goal,
Good.
My mission.
You.
You're welcome. But that wasn't the right path because they're not hormone experts. They don't really understand intricacies of women. So yes, gynecologists are surgeons. I spent 4 years doing a surgical residency, learning how to do hysterectomy 4 different ways and stat C-sections and procedures.
Cha-ching. And that's when
I'm a surgeon.
Right, so the insurance companies say, we will pay you this amount of money for these procedures. And then when you go to them and go, no, I'm just going to check out their hormones and go from there, the insurance model's going, well, we're not going to pay you for that.
Right. And
it's
so,
incentivized. Surgery's incentivized, period.
And even if you find an OBGYN who is well-meaning and wants to take care of you like I did, like I really wanted to help my patients, the tools in my toolbox from my training were birth control pills, synthetic hormones, you know, other birth control options like IUDs and surgical procedures. So when a patient came to me complaining of something, in my mind, I was like, can I cut it out? Can I remove it? What can I burn it? What can I do? And if I can't, then let's try the birth control. And like that was my toolbox. And unfortunately, that's not the problem. The problem is the gut, the adrenals, the thyroid, the environment, the diet, the lifestyle, all the stuff that we don't ask about. And so it wasn't until I went on to study functional medicine and anti-aging medicine and I went through menopause, you know, certification through the North American Menopause Society, all that extra training. That's how I became a women's health expert. It wasn't becoming an OBGYN. I was a dang good surgeon, but I couldn't help you with your menopause. Like I had Premarin and Prempro. Those were my options. And so we can't even be
poison
mad.
And poison.
Right. We can't even be mad at the doctors. We're just looking to the wrong people for advice. So this is, I want women to understand that, because if I say this test is good, you might go ask your OBGYN, but they don't know how to interpret those results, or sometimes they don't even know how to order those tests. And so that just causes more tension and more frustration. So I encourage women, find a functional practitioner, find someone who is certified in hormones, who has gone through extra training beyond conventional medicine. So if you do that, I would say blood work is a great way to look at hormones if you know a few things. If you know that your cycle is pretty regular, so that you know what time of the month you're checking those hormones, or if you're completely done cycling and you're not having any periods, then it's really easy to interpret that if you've been trained. Blood work tells you how much hormone was produced. So it gives you a level of estradiol and estrone, but it doesn't tell you what your body's doing with those hormones. So that's where saliva and urine testing can be so helpful, because they're showing you how is your body metabolizing those hormones, which means after they're done using it, does it get broken down and sent to the liver for removal? Does it go to the stool and get removed from the body? Does it get reabsorbed? Does it go down this pathway we don't love so much called 4-hydroxyestrone? That can cause a quinone reaction, which damages the DNA inside the cells. And so I love Dutch testing, dried urine testing for comprehensive hormones, because you can see those metabolic pathways of your hormones and see, do we need to intervene and shift how you're metabolizing your hormones? Because that is what causes hormone imbalances, how you are handling your hormones, not always just the production of how much you made.
So that's where the pathways and that's the pathway conversation. And then I just heard Gary Brecka on Joe Rogan is from November. And he talks about also with our bodies, it's how we methylate things. Now, am I complicating things by asking, bringing in methylation into this conversation?
No. So part of the metabolizing pathways, one is called 2-hydroxyestrone. We have three main estrogens in the body. Right. Estriol, which is a very weak form of estrogen, it seems to benefit the vaginal area, the skin, and it's part in its highest during menopause. Then we have estradiol. That's our main reproductive estrogen. That is what grows our breast tissue. It grows the lining inside our uterus every month. It puts the fat on our hips. It gets us ready for a pregnancy. And then there's estrone. Estrone can come from estradiol. It's made in fat cells from testosterone. And estrone, that gets metabolized either down a 2 pathway, a 4 pathway, or a 16 pathway. The 2 pathway is you're done with that estrogen. Your body used it, and now it wants to get rid of it. So it sends it to the liver and gets methylated.
So is our goal the 2 pathway?
It is, unless you're in menopause and you want to recycle it and turn it into estriol. So it depends on your age and your situation. So when it gets to the liver, it has to go through 2 phases of breakdown. And one of those is getting a methyl group attached to it. I call it the garbage tag. So if you methylate, if your methylation pathway works, you put the garbage tag on that and it gets sent to the urine and stool for removal. The crazy thing is, in the stool, certain bacteria make an enzyme called beta-glucuronidase, and that enzyme will cut that garbage tag off of the estrogen that your liver just worked so hard to get rid of. And so you could reabsorb it from your intestines, from the stool. And if you're constipated and it's sitting there for a couple of days, there's a lot more time for that process to happen. And so a lot of women can get into an estrogen-dominant state because they have the wrong bacteria living in their gut, because they're constipated and not moving their bowels, because their thyroid is sluggish or downregulated, or because they aren't methylating well in the liver. So you have to look at all these pathways of what the heck is your body doing with estrogen. It's not that estrogen is bad for you or dangerous. Estrogen makes who you are. It's incredible. Mm-hmm. It's amazing. But if we are drinking alcohol every night, popping Tylenol PM, we're constipated, all the things, we're going to have a buildup of the bad estrone metabolites that we don't want too much of. And that can damage the DNA inside the cells and increase the risk of cancer.
What's your opinion on like a liver cleanse then? Or, I was going to say gallbladder, but I guess the gallbladder's just a different organ here, but a liver cleanse, how important are those?
So I love to support the liver ongoing. Like women regularly would benefit from things like taking milk thistle and eating garlic and ginger and beets and all the things that support the liver, arugula, all the bitters and
we could take milk thistle every day or even garlic and
absolutely. Some women will take supplements like diendomethane or calcium D-glucarate. Those are directly affecting those metabolite pathways we just talked about.
Is that the DIM?
Yep.
Is that
DIM? Diendomethane.
Okay.
That pushes estrogen down the 2-hydroxy pathway that we want more of. And calcium D-glucarate stops that enzyme process from happening in the stool. So it helps you remove that estrogen and not reabsorb it in the intestines. So I love doing stool testing on my hormone patients because I want to see what does that beta-glucuronidase level look like? Is it really high? And we're now starting to understand that that level tends to get high with menopause. And I just believe that our body is so incredible. It's always trying to figure out, how can I keep this estrogen around? She's menopausal now. Her ovaries are no longer making estrogen. We need that estrone as much as possible and that estriol. So let's increase her beta-glucuronidase and help her reabsorb it. Let's shift down the 16-hydroxy pathway to make more estriol. Like, your body's always trying to stay in homeostasis, but we assume it's always failing us, and it's not. Like, weight gain at menopause is not because your body hates you. It's because your body needs more estrogen, and estrogen is made in fat cells. So your body puts on 5 or 10 pounds so that you have more estrogen available. It's a natural process. And if you want to get rid of that weight, you're going to want to give your body some estrogen so that it can get rid of those fat cells and say, oh, we're getting estrogen exogenously. Thank you. And not worry about trying to gain weight. It's a whole different way of looking at things.
I'm recording this ad, I'm pulling back the curtain, at 7 o'clock on a Sunday night because I just finished a delightful dinner that included Ralston Family Farms rice. I tell you that because I talk all the time about being a meat-based eater, meaning about 80% of what I consume is meat. And then the rest is, so beef, butter, bacon, and eggs, rice, and fresh fruit in season. And this is March. There is no fresh fruit in season where I am. So we had rice with our bowl of beef and put some cheese on top. I think we had avocados, but I don't, now that I remember, I forgot to put it on there. And some salsa, you know, things like that. But I say that because rice goes with everything. And at Ralston Family Farms, they have a plethora of recipes to help accompany your meal. It can be the main dish in your family. I don't care what you eat. I just know what's best for me. And including rice in my diet all the time is great. And you know, you can do the resistant starch rice by letting it cool, putting it in the refrigerator. Google that one because it helps lower your insulin load, which is really fascinating about it. But it's a healthy part of any diet. And you can get all the good rices. There are 6 varieties and there's rice grits. Girl, that stuff is so good. Rice grits with cheese and a little cream cheese. Yes, so good. They have it all. And you know what? They're there to answer your questions about the farm and their rice. And a Ralston will take your call. RalstonFamilyFarms.com. If you've ever listened to my podcast, you know that I've talked about my friend Pat Becker-Wallace, who's a philanthropist in Arkansas and in Oklahoma, in fact. And she devotes a lot of her time, attention, and resources to help different organizations. One is the Arkansas Symphony Orchestra here. Another one is anything to do with dogs and animals and the rescues. In fact, her love extends beyond that. At dogtalktv.com, where I want you to go and check out the books, because one of them is a book she's written and all the proceeds benefit a different organization. The book is A Carriage for Cowboy. It is so sweet, and it's about it's kind of an old-timey sport of carriage riding and driving. So it benefits the American Driving Society Incorporated, and that supports carriage drivers in the United States and Canada through education, events, rules for competition, and licensing of officials. It's a great family event that you'll now see it at different competitions. So she's written this book, A Carriage for Cowboy, which is about her daughter and her daughter's horse, Cowboy, and it is so sweet. Adding that to your library is a good thing. Adding any of the books from dogtalktv.com is a very good thing because many of the proceeds, if it's one of her books, definitely goes to charitable organizations. She helps the rescues here, as I was saying, in Central Arkansas, but there may be one near you that it helps. If you love animals, go to that website, buy some books. You'll be thankful you did. dogtalktv.com. But you know, it confuses us when you tell us we have estrogen dominance when we don't have enough estrogen.
Right. So it matters.
I know it's not your fault, but
no, it matters what's going on with your other hormones.
It's very confusing. It's a ratio, right?
It's a ratio. But here's the thing. Most women who are estrogen dominant have a terrible time through perimenopause. They even tend to be more symptomatic. And then when they go into menopause, they anecdotally seem to be more symptomatic and have more issues. I liken it to the idea of if you fell out of a one-story building to the ground, it would hurt, but it wouldn't be that bad. If you fell out of a three-story building, you'd probably break something. It would hurt a lot. So if your estrogens are really, really high and your levels drop down, you're going to have more symptoms, as opposed to a nice balanced estrogen that's kind of just slowly declining. It's going to be less symptomatic, less severe. And the piece that we need to talk about is the adrenals. How does that fit into this whole scenario, right? Because I'm guessing that was partly why you were driven into this perimenopausal issue so young.
For sure. And we forget. So the adrenals, they've been around a long time, but they really kick into high gear when our ovaries stop producing, right? Is that when we get tricked and testosterone stops and all the other important things?
So here's the deal. If you think about how your great-grandmother lived, she probably didn't have some high-pressure career and running kids to five different sports and trying to look good and hang out with her girlfriends and have a boss she can't stand and like all the things that we deal with in this day and age, especially in our 40s and 50s. Like, we're at the prime of our life. We are busy. We're doing all the things. We're awesome women. But our physiology doesn't necessarily keep up with everything our mind wants to do. So our adrenal glands are being overactive in our 30s and 40s because it's trying to keep up with all the stress of our daily life in this day and age. And so we're pumping out constant cortisol, we're pumping out adrenaline, all the things. Well, it turns out that the adrenal glands also make DHEA. That's a hormone. It's our anti-aging, keep us young and healthy
throughout
hormone.
Our life. It is.
And it peaks in our 30s and then it kind of slowly starts to decline. But if you are constantly taxing your adrenals to the point of adrenal dysfunction, your body's innate intelligence kicks in yet again and downregulates and says, we're not doing crazy anymore. We're not making all that cortisol and all that adrenaline anymore. And it will stop responding. And that feels like adrenal fatigue a little bit because your production gets downregulated, it gets decreased. So does your DHEA eventually if this goes on long enough. And DHEA in our adrenals, that's our backup sex hormones. So when our ovaries stop making estrogen, progesterone, and testosterone, we go, okay, adrenals, it's time to kick in. You're the backup ovaries. Give us our sex hormones now in this stage of our life. And your adrenals are like, we're exhausted. We're done with your craziness. We're not doing this. And so if you go into menopause with adrenal dysfunction, you're going to be hurting big time because you don't have that backup supply.
Okay, so you're falling out of the 10-story building at that point.
Absolutely.
Okay.
And nobody's saving you. Nobody's going to save you. Mm-mm. So I very often will see a highly successful woman come to me and her DHEA is like 30 or 40 when it should be triple digits. It should be 152, 250, depending on the lab range. And there's no estrogen, there's no progesterone, there's no testosterone. And she wonders why she is so miserable, why she hates her husband and doesn't want to go out and enjoy life anymore, why she can't exercise and recover from workouts. There's just nothing left because you have depleted all of your sex hormones. And so then your thyroid has to work overtime and that can drive a lot of thyroid issues. So it's common to see thyroid diagnoses happen after menopause and autoimmune conditions come on and the whole slew of things, but nobody's putting all the pieces together to say, wait a second, we got to reel in your stressed out life. We got to clean up your diet and heal your gut and all of that if we want to get hormones back into balance.
How can we equip someone? So if I were in my 30s again and I was facing this, what can we do to tell that woman listening how she can be prepared so she's just on the first floor when she falls out of that building? That she's not taking the escalator up because it's really going to hurt. What can we do to get her ready for the inevitable change. And people, once you, I'm telling you, on the other side, of course, I'm doing bioidentical hormone replacement therapy. I feel great. I mean, I feel like I did really in my early 30s. My energy level, my hair looks good, you know, all the things, my skin looks good, all those things. It's because I'm doing all these little things, but I wasn't in the beginning. So I plumb fell apart right before God and everybody in my 30s. So what can we do to equip that woman, get into her 40s and 50s?
Oh my goodness. This is super important. And this is what I talk about in my book. You have to figure out what is it that you're doing in your everyday life, all the little choices you're making that are driving your thyroid and adrenals mm-hmm. and sex hormones to do what they do. And unfortunately, we have been really misguided and told outright lies that were maybe well-intentioned, maybe not, like fat causes, you know, fat when it's actually sugar. I talk, you know, if you want to understand, like, why do I have cravings? Why can't I lose weight? What's going on? What's driving all this? Chapter 4, I talk about fatty liver, gluten addiction, sugar addiction. It turns out that in the 1800s, we ate 2 pounds of sugar a year as a person. Oh. You would eat 2 pounds a year.
Girl.
Now we eat do that 60 pounds a year. That is over a pound a week the average American eats. Mm. It is so toxic. It causes aging. I had Dr. Tony Yoon on my podcast yesterday, and he was talking mm-hmm. about how that ages our skin more than anything is the sugar.
It's the glycation. I heard the glucose goddess talks about it. And for people to understand, like, I didn't know what that meant. She's, and you may have heard this analogy, she said, those of you who cook or have been to the Costco and you've gotten a rotisserie chicken and the skin is dried up and it's delicious and all that, she said, it's glycated. It's gone through the glycation process, and that's what sugar does to your skin. You hear it like that and you're like, ew.
Yeah. Ugh. Yeah, but I think of a burnt marshmallow. And you can the see sugar it. Just gets burnt
yes,
up.
Right. Right.
Right? And the same thing is happening with fatty liver. Now we have 24% of US adults have been diagnosed with fatty liver. I regularly get women coming to me and wow. they're like, well, my primary doctor says it's no big deal. We just need to watch it. Like, no big deal.
It is a vital organ. I mean, I can't believe someone would discount that.
Exactly.
That just drives me crazy. The other thing I see with that same woman who comes to me and says, I've got non-alcoholic fatty liver disease, and they want to take my gallbladder out because I'm having GI problems. And that's why, I mean, I've been criticized for making this statement, but I say it all the time, keep your parts. Unless they're diseased or cancer, you know, and then mm-hmm. that's still, we can talk about it there too. But that's a decision you make with your provider, but make sure you're well-informed. But don't rip out your gallbladder and protect your liver. So you're saying you can rehabilitate the liver easily, right?
It takes a minute, but you can do it. Absolutely. Absolutely. And you need your liver to metabolize your hormones and to get rid of the toxins that come into your body all day long. And as a surgeon, I was trained to remove the offending organ. That's what we do. If the organ is misbehaving, just remove it. It's not critical to life, so remove it. And that is
the worst. Yes, it is. It's critical to life.
Exactly. It's the worst way to look at it. I see so many women with problems after they have their gallbladders removed. And what we fail to realize, okay, I learned this in medical school, but then between medical school and residency, you're trained to forget everything you learn because you learn the biochemistry, you learn all the root cause stuff. I learned that.
And then Big Pharma knocks on your door and says, don't worry about it. Here's a pill for your ill.
Exactly. Exactly. So I learned in medical school that women in their 40s who have, you know, extra fat, so they're obese and they're still fertile and they're in their 40s, they get gallbladder disease.
Right. And they're fair. One of them. Yeah.
Yes. So it turns out that's just estrogen dominance. We have estrogen receptors wow. in our gallbladder, just like we do wow. in our stomach and intestines, and it causes the gallbladder to not contract and squeeze the bile out the way it's supposed to. It causes it to be stunned. And so the bile sits in there and it turns into stones. So really, gallbladder disease happens in a high estrogen state. And so we need to be monitoring for that and making sure that estrogen's being kept in check by progesterone and that we have a healthy liver, gallbladder, bile duct happening, because the bacteria in the intestines climb up the duct into the gallbladder and they affect how it functions. And so it turns out there's this whole microscopic ecosystem driving how our organs function, but we are cavemen and we just think, well, lop it out, we don't need it, instead of looking at the physiology of it and saving these women from so much pain and so much destruction.
It's so short-sighted to have that as a panacea when, I mean, you talk about it, and I've heard Ben Azadi say it, it just the innate intelligence of the human body. And, you know, and we can talk about your faith journey as a Christian, we are fearfully and wonderfully made. I mean, that's
absolutely.
What the Bible says.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And so with that, I just always say these things are often fixable. There's somebody yelling at her device right now saying, I had to and I understand there are exceptions. But if I've heard it once, I've heard it 1,000 times from women who say, you think you have digestive issues, get your gallbladder out. Then you have a dumping syndrome. Then you're running to the restroom at Tiffany's in New York. A friend of mine said she was traveling and she said to them with a serious face, I have to use the restroom, you know, because she said I had my gallbladder out. And it is mostly women. We hear that a few times with men.
Right. So equipping you would step back and say, if this happens to mostly women, maybe their hormones are involved in the situation.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Deductive reasoning. Right.
Right. But we don't. Yeah,
That's a good way to put that.
We really have.
Yeah, we have. Yes, we have for the current models. Now, are gallbladder ectomy and other issues that we see in the U.S., do the Europeans, because they have different diets, they have different gluten, some have ancient grains, we know there aren't the pesticides and the wines and some other things that bother us in the West. Do Europeans have the same rate of gallbladder removal and hormonal imbalances, or do you know?
I do not know that. That would be a great question to ask. I do know that women in the United States tend to fare better in Europe when they have gluten sensitivity right. issues. Right. I know personally I can handle gluten in Mexico and other places that haven't genetically modified their gluten the way that we have. Yeah. So it's very interesting, to say the least. I just want to add about the gallbladder that bile not only helps us absorb fats, so if we don't have that, we can get diarrhea, but it also helps us remove the toxins that come into our body all day long. It's like a binder. It grabs the toxins and it helps remove it out of the body. And so if you don't have a functioning gallbladder, you're increasing your risk of cancer. I mean, you really are, because you're not able to remove those toxins from your body. And
it's
they just
filter.
Circulate. Yeah. It's an absolute filter.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, before we get into your book, and I don't want to overlook your book, it's Fast to Faith, Reconnect Your Body, Mind, and Soul. This is the longest title, by the way. I had to write it down. For Lasting Weight Loss, and I know your publisher likes those, Sustained Energy and Unstoppable Strength. We'll talk about that in just a minute. But some of my younger clients, because, you know, I am 100, so I mainly see other women who are 100.
Well, you look damn good.
For 100, thank you. I think so, too. 61, not so much. But my point is, I do see a few younger girls who have been put on birth control pills because of the cramping issue. What do you say about that? Because I don't want anyone to suffer from cramps, and I don't want any young girl who doesn't want to get pregnant to get pregnant. Because I said, get off, and I wouldn't say get off birth control pills, but just partnering with them. What do you do then about the cramping issue that a lot of people say, just start the birth control pill?
Like I said, that's the tool in the toolbox. The birth control pill supposedly helps with cramping and acne and mood swings and all the things.
Right.
But in reality, it's not. It's making your issue worse in the long term and adding new problems onto it. And if we have time, we can get into all that. But in chapter 5 of my book, I talk about how your gut health determines your gyne health. So women may not understand this, but as a surgeon, I would go through your abdomen to get to your pelvic organs. Your bowels literally live on top of, around, and underneath your ovaries, your tubes, and your uterus. So they're physically touching. And women who have suffered from endometriosis know this because their bowels will get scarred to their pelvic organs and cause major problems. So I would have to go in there and physically break up that scar tissue, remove and detach the bowels from the tubes and the ovaries and the uterus. And what's happening is that microscopically, there's chemical reactions going on. There's an inflammatory response of cytokines and interleukins. Mm-hmm. We might know those words from, you know, the pandemic. Mm-hmm. Those are chemical reactions that cause inflammation and destruction. And that actually crosses from inside of your intestines out into your pelvic organs. And so you don't have to have outright stage 4 endometriosis to be suffering from gut dysbiosis, driving this inflammation in your pelvis. Gut problems cause your ovaries to be angry and not be able to produce their hormones properly. They cause inflammation in the fallopian tubes. They cause cysts on the ovaries. They contribute to the growth of fibroids. And so we're completely disregarding the fact that the microbiome that is running the show in our abdomen has any effect on our pelvic organs. Some gynecologists will acknowledge that, chronic gut issues will cause a yeast infection vaginally or chronic bacterial vaginosis. But nobody's talking about the organs in between, the uterus, the tubes, the cervix, the ovaries. Like, hello, where's our common sense again? So you have to clean up the diet. You have to get your gut healed and stop all the inflammation that's happening in your abdomen, or you are going to have painful periods. You are going to drive ovarian cyst production and PCOS and all the other things. And nobody's talking about that.
Okay, I can see that because I've always asked what comes first, the chicken or the egg, PCOS, insulin resistance, but it must be there's dysfunction with the ovaries. And then Dr. Bickman says then the insulin resistance comes in and then often inflames and puts us in a state where we're hyperinsulinemia. But our sex organs are drivers, I guess, to much of our health.
Absolutely. We actually have estrogen, progesterone, and testosterone receptors in all parts of our body. That's another myth that we think it just affects our pelvis. And literally, we have estrogen receptors in our brain, in our cardiovascular system. We know that as soon as a woman goes into menopause and her estrogen level stays low, she has an increase in her blood pressure. Sometimes it's a significant amount to where she now needs medication, but sometimes it's just a few degrees and nobody makes mention of it. Because what's happening is the estrogen receptors in the arteries are the little tubes that the blood flows through from the heart, they need to be elastic and flexible and mobile to handle changes in your blood pressure. So when you're sitting, you need a certain amount of pressure to push the blood through. When you're working out and doing HIIT training, you need a lot bigger pressure and you need flexible arteries that can handle those changes. When you go into menopause, your arteries stiffen up like pipes and they no longer have that flexibility to be able to handle those changes. So you get exercise intolerance. You can no longer work out the way you did. And and your blood pressure shoots up because your heart has to pump really hard to pump it through the pipes instead of the flexible arteries. And cardiologists don't acknowledge any of this. They're not being taught any of this. It's very,
very sad. They have a pill.
Exactly. And let me just tell you, let me make a comment about that, because you are completely right. I had 2 years of medical school, and then you go out to the doctor's offices. It's called an externship, and you hang out with different doctors for a month. I literally met at least 2 to 3 drug reps every single week. They bring you lunch as a medical student, as a resident.
That's right. Yeah.
And
that's wonderful.
They sit and they tell you about your drugs, and that is how you learn how to treat conditions. Here's the newest drug. Let's try that. And that is literally how I learned to practice medicine, was from the drug reps at the doctor's offices. I'm just being 100% completely honest. It's sad, but it's true. So the only hormones I knew how to prescribe were the ones that the drug reps were teaching me about.
The synthetic ones, yeah. That's the last thing you need. And again, none of those drugs ever cure you. You manage your symptoms with the drugs. I would like any diagnosis I'm giving, I would like to reverse.
Exactly.
I hope people start thinking, oh, you mean I can reverse that? Yes. Yes,
yeah, I was
okay,
told
well, we
I
just have a few
reverse-
minutes left. Well, your thyroid story is very impressive.
Yeah, and I was told I could reverse that, but you really can. You can reverse autoimmune conditions. You can reverse thyroid dysfunction, adrenal dysfunction, all of it.
That's very impressive. Okay, let's talk about your book, your Fast to Faith. And when you say fast, I'm a 8-year intermittent faster now, and I became certified as a health coach because of my interest in fasting, how it changed my life. I mean, it reversed many of my conditions. I'm still, my thyroid and I have been broken up for a while, but it's still giving me, you know, I still have to take medicine for it, but that's neither here nor there. But are you talking about fasting in the way I'm discussing it, the Jen Stevens and Dr. Fung way?
Absolutely. Jen is my girl. Love Jen. I have been incorporating intermittent fasting with my patients for many years because the majority of them are perimenopausal, menopausal, and you cannot eat the way you did in your 20s and 30s. So fasting is a superpower for menopausal women. It really is a game changer. But what I found was, a lot of women were afraid of it, or they felt like they failed at it because they couldn't make the transition from being a sugar burner to being a fat burner. They were so used to eating every couple hours and eating a high carbohydrate diet and all of the things and drinking all their calories that they couldn't go without food. They got hangry. They got jittery. And so I started teaching them how to regain your metabolic flexibility, how to make that shift and get back into fat burning mode, and then go on to do fasting. So I did this for years. And what I would notice was women did amazing in the programs. Like, I lost 20 pounds. I lost 25 pounds. You know, I feel amazing. My adrenals are working better. All the things. My insulin resistance is gone. But then they would go back to their old habits after the program was over, and they wouldn't adopt it as a lifestyle. And what I found was their mindset was one of the biggest issues. It was that they were relying on their willpower or just complete avoidance and not being around the foods that they were addicted to. They weren't breaking up with sugar, all the things. And so God gave me a download one day, and he was like, teach them how to feed their faith, and that will nourish their soul and help them really have the strength to take on fasting and incorporate it as a lifestyle. So I added in the faith piece, and we meditate on a scripture every day that teaches you that God gave you your body as a temple. And as a way to honor it, you need to take care of it and not treat it like a garbage can and just put whatever in it. Like, you really should be treating it as a temple. It's a temporary vessel that God lent to you for this earthly experience. Yeah. And how you treat it is really important. I mean, there's so many scriptures, and we study that. And women really find their strength in the fact that, hey, I'm doing this for my creator who created me. I'm honoring him. And fasting gives you so much clarity, but sometimes if you're focused on the superficial stuff, that's when you fail because you're not actually growing spiritually and using fasting for what it was intended for. And you look at any religion across the globe, fasting is the quickest way to connect with your creator and to hear them talking. And so it's to me, it's a superpower, like fasting and faith. Those are your superpowers, and you can completely shift your health, your mindset, your life, all of it. And the women that have gone through my program the past year, it's just incredible to see it. It's so rewarding.
I'm so glad. So this book comes out in February of 2024. We should be airing this around that time. So by then, I'm going to order it. Will it
awesome.
Be on Audible?
Oh, I will send it to you. It's supposed to be. Oh. I'm working on that Audible piece right okay. now. And we have an online okay. version of this program with a whole sisterhood of women. And we do it all together. So you can do that as well. It starts on Lent, which is actually Valentine's Day this year, February 14th.
Okay.
So
oh, cool.
It's really awesome. But if you want to just read the book, get the book for a couple of your girlfriends and do it with them, the whole program is laid out in the book. But the important part is I wanted women to understand why their body is doing what it's doing. And so if you know the why things are happening, it's so much easier to take on a fasting program and really stick with it because you realize, oh, my body's trying to tell me this. And you get back to your intuition and your innate intelligence. And I truly believe it's just the Holy Spirit guiding you like, oh, that's what my body's trying to tell me. That's what my creator's trying to tell me. But we're trained to just ignore it and band-aid all the symptoms when we really mm-hmm. should be listening. They are messages. They're so important.
Okay. She's at Gutsy Gynecologist. I'll put that in the show notes along with her website where you can, maybe we can find a link to the book and put that there as well. Dr. Barber, thank you so much for doing this. You enlightened me on some things I had no idea about. But come on, everybody, let's get that DIM, take your DIM to get the 2-hydroxy pathway.
Yes, good
right?
job. Good job.
Am I saying that right? Okay.
Exactly.
Okay, thank you. So you have to stop drinking alcohol. I hate to tell you people that, but
yep.
you'll figure it out somehow. Okay, thank you. Great job today.
Oh, thank you so much for having me, Lisa. It's such an honor.
Thanks for listening to the Lisa Fisher Said podcast. If you would, leave a review and follow the show. This podcast is produced by ClantonCreative.com.